Please rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. All manner of persons having anything to bring before the Honorable Justices of the Supreme Court of the State of Delaware will now draw near and give their attendance. The court is now open. God save the state and the Honorable Court.
Morning, Counsel.
Morning.
Morning, Your Honors. I rise solely to introduce my colleague at counsel table, Sam Herzl from Morris Nichols. And with the court's permission, Mr. Fenster from the Russ August firm in Los Angeles will make a presentation on behalf of Mr. Tatin.
Welcome to Delaware.
Thank you.
Chief Justice Steele.
Morning.
Justice Holland. Justice Ridgely. Good morning. May it please the court, William Johnston for defendant below, appellant Home Store, Inc. And with me at counsel table is my associate, Dawn Jones. With the court's permission, I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for reply. Thanks, sir. Home Store submits that this corporate advancement case should be reversed and remanded for reopened discovery and new trial. Our reasons for saying so are three. First, the Court of Chancery erred as a matter of law in rejecting 8 of Home Store's 9 asserted defenses to liability. Second, the court was clearly erroneous in finding that Home Store did not at trial carry its burden of proof in connection with its unclean hands defense and its related defense, breach of the implied covenant of good faith and fair dealing. Also, that the court erred as a matter of law in rejecting the implied covenant defense post-trial. Third, central to this case is the issue of whether the court committed reversible error. First, in properly concluding that Home Store's unclean hands defense should survive summary judgment, but then in improperly limiting discovery in connection with that defense, and finally, improperly finding after trial that Home Store had not carried its burden of proof to establishing the sheltering wasting of assets that supported that defense. Home Store contends that these errors, together with the other errors described in the company's briefs, warrant reversal. Neither the record nor sound public policy can support the trial court's rulings. Turning first to the record did not and does not, we submit, support the trial court's conclusion that Home Store's sheltering concern was limited to Mr. Tatin's purchase in June 2001 of the first Parkland, Florida house and to what Mr. Tatin knew at the time of the as yet to be undertaken November 2001 Audit Committee investigation. Rather, time and again, Home Store asked the question of the trial court, what happened to the millions of dollars that Tatin indisputably made in selling his Home Store stock after artificially inflating the stock through his revenue enhancement scheme?
Mr. Johnson, you talked about policy. One of the tensions the Court of Chancery always has here is what it's going to rule on initially when the request for advancement is made and what it's going to look at later when the company contends there should be some type of repayment. Now, why couldn't all of these things have waited until the end? I realize your client's position was you're not entitled to the advancement, and if we give you the money, we're never going to be able to recover it. But putting that aside, hypothetically, where someone could repay the money, but might not, in retrospect, have been entitled, you know, to have their fees paid. How does the Chancery decide when it's going to stop all the proceedings in the beginning and not authorize the advancement, not make the money available, and when does it decide it at the end?
Your Honor, Delaware law and public policy indisputably is the effect that the law generally favors providing advancement in order to attract and retain top quality individuals as officers and directors of Delaware corporations. But there are certain requirements in connection with providing that advancement, even so-called mandatory advancement under bylaws such as Home Store's at issue here. One of those requirements is that the claimant was made a party to underlying proceedings by reason of the fact that he or she was, in this case, an officer of the defendant company. We've taken the position below that Mr. Duffin, as established by the pleadings in connection with the underlying proceedings, was not made a party to the proceedings in that capacity, and so was not entitled to advancement. We took, as Your Honor knows, a number of positions with respect to various defenses in addition to the unclean hands defense. But focusing on the unclean hands defense for a moment, if I may, the case law makes clear that advancement or advance indemnification is essentially an extension of credit by the corporation and its shareholders. And I submit that that Delaware public policy would not support that extension of credit to an officer, or in this case, former officer of a Delaware corporation, where there is evidence, and we believe abundant evidence to the effect, that that officer has consciously sheltered or wasted assets in an effort to deprive the company and its shareholders from ever being able to receive repayment of amounts advanced. And it's a great practical concern to a company like HomeStore, presumably to any telecorporation. But here we're talking about millions of dollars.
And this relates to your contention that your discovery was improperly limited because, according to your brief, the chancellor read your request as relating only to the house that was purchased in Florida, when in fact your request was broader.
Yes, sir. That's correct. I mean, what happened was, in our answer, we asserted, and in summary judgment briefing, we asserted what the company's belief was at the time, namely that Mr. Duffin had purchased an expensive home in Florida protected by Florida's homestead exemption. We knew that indisputably Mr. Duffin had made something like $15 to $20 million on inside stock sales in 2000 and 2001 when he was an officer at HomeStore. The company believed that Mr. Duffin had essentially dumped all of those assets, or virtually all of those assets, into the property in Florida. And there's other evidence in the public record of similar approaches taken by Ken Lay and others.
Well, now, your opponents say, assuming that you should have gotten discovery into that, that since you got to cross-examine the accountant at length, the discovery ruling, even if it had been erroneous, became somewhat harmless in the overall context.
They do say that, Your Honor, and it's absolutely wrong. The record just doesn't support their claim of no prejudice. What we ran into as a result, to take a step back, our intention was to pursue essentially forensic accounting in connection with Mr. Duffin's assets, what his assets were or had been, in whose name they were held or to whom they had been transferred, what happened to these assets. We launched a round of written discovery requests. Those were resisted by the Duffin side. The chancellor first limited our discovery to the one Florida house, which in the course of summary judgment briefing was disclosed had cost only $1.45 million, but only $1.45 million in the sense of our then asking again, where did these other millions go? The chancellor, in a follow-up ruling, further limited the discovery to what I was touching on a moment ago, essentially evidence that Mr. Duffin, whatever Mr. Duffin knew after the November 2001 audit committee investigation was initiated. So when I deposed Mr. Duffin and inquired into facts that we had to try to develop through self-help, through literally internet searches and so forth, but facts in connection with the Duffin Family Trust and the Duffin Family Limited Liability Limited Partnership and transfers and so forth and so on, every step of the way, I was blocked with instructions not to answer by Mr. Fenster, Mr. Duffin's counsel. He blocked time and again inquiry into Mr. Defeen's financial condition, what were the assets were, what happened to them, with the sole exception of questions in connection with this June 2001 purchase of this one house in Florida.
Well, didn't the Chancellor base his limitation upon the fact that the defense pleaded was only related to this Florida home?
That was Chancellor Chandler's characterization, yes, Your Honor.
Well, was that the state of the record throughout the proceedings? The Florida home was pleaded on the basis of the pleadings themselves?
Well, the state of the record was the answer itself did continue to refer to the, it was not amended, did continue to refer to the expensive home in Florida, though, and I apologize, I don't have it in front of me at the moment. I believe certainly the spirit was that the sheltering concern was broader, even in the answer, than just directed to the one house. But as I touched on a moment ago, in the course of the summary judgment briefing, there had been no discovery before the cross motions for summary judgment were filed. In the course of the briefing, what the affidavits from the Tefien side disclosed for the first time was that this house cost essentially $1.5 million, begging the question of where the rest of the money go. And that was the question that I was putting to the Chancellor in the course of the summary judgment briefing and later in connection with his discovery rulings. So we pursued the self-help that I described. We were blocked in deposition discovery. We found ourselves approaching trial. Pre-trial briefs were filed. We laid out the evidence that we had been able to develop. The other side filed motions in limine, trying to exclude that evidence. The Chancellor did not rule on those motions in advance of trial. Instead, took up the introduction of that evidence as it came in, and consistently overruled Mr. Defeen's objections to our introduction of that evidence. But it was too late. Our hands were tied because the discovery had been limited. The question in connection with then what the Tefien side claims was if you will, corrective discovery or substitute discovery. What happened was Mr. Tefien was on the stand the first day of trial, beginning of July. I was asking about these various financial dealings. I'd get either no response or an I don't recall response. Finally, the Chancellor adjourned the trial shortly after lunch, and Your Honors have read what he said, but to our way of thinking, or at least what we thought was we were hearing, was he was doubting Mr. Tefien's credibility. He referred to the witness feigning ignorance of financial dealings, saying that he relied time and again on this Ash Narayan, the financial advisor. And we then had about an hour and a half in chambers conference with the Chancellor, and the upshot was that Mr. Narayan was supposed to submit an affidavit that the Chancellor in chambers described as intended to be tantamount to an IRS audit reflecting cash inflows, cash outflows. He wanted to know what happened to Tefien's assets. We then, over the course of the next couple weeks, eventually saw this affidavit. I had one day to depose Narayan, having just received the finalized affidavit and hundreds of pages of exhibits. I was pressed throughout the deposition by Mr. Fenster to move the deposition along. We came back to Delaware, resumed the trial. Mr. Narayan was immediately put on the stand as an adverse witness. I cross-examined him. That was my opportunity to have any sort of further follow-up with Mr. Narayan, and then I immediately was confronted with having to resume questioning of Mr. Tefien never having had an opportunity to have document or deposition discovery directed to Tefien after we learned whatever we'd learned from Narayan. And what did we learn from Narayan? We essentially were faced with summaries from him and his staff of these millions of dollars of payments made by Tefien, almost $4 million made to shut down productions, whatever that was, between December of 2001, December of 2002. Living expense, quote-unquote...
And that was a paintball fight?
Yes, sir. Combined paintball music tournament. But who knows where those funds actually went. We raised the question in the brief, in our briefs, could these have been Tefien's own so-called round-trip transactions of which he's been accused in connection with the scheme with Stuart Wolf and so forth. We didn't raise that rhetorically. We don't know whether Tefien, through the shutdown production payments or through so-called living expense payments, checks hundreds of thousands of dollars to him and his wife and others.
Well, how about identifying the reversible error? Understanding you didn't get the discovery, we do have the affidavit, and what we've read in the briefs was before the chancellor, and the chancellor decided, notwithstanding his questions about the credibility of Mr. Tefien and the subsequent introduction of the summaries from the accountant that seemed to indicate whatever you've alleged, he was satisfied and went forward with his ruling. If you'd gotten the additional discovery, how would the result have been different? And identify exactly what the chancellor did that constituted reversible error here.
Well, what he did, first, as I mentioned at the outset, was he rejected as a matter of law 8 of the 9 defenses, but focusing on unclean hands and the implied covenant of good faith and fair dealing. He tied the hands of Homestore in discovery and so at trial, and I would submit, essentially, respectfully, he tied his own hands. He stated in his post-trial decision that he considered all the circumstances in connection with these various transfers that Tefien made and the trust he set up and so forth and so on. There is no way, in fairness to the trial court, that the trial court had an opportunity to consider all these circumstances because the circumstances were not fully developed. And the first, Justice Allen, the type of forensic accounting that we sought to pursue, I firmly believe would show that the timeline of events that we set forth at, I think, pages 12 to 17 of our opening brief, simply the tip of the iceberg.
And those are all the bullet points in your brief?
Yes, sir. Those are the bullet points. The court, you're correct, of course. Your Honor is correct that the Chancellor Chandler did conclude that he had enough in hand to decide what he decided, but we do respectfully submit that he committed error in doing so. I see I'm down to about 3 minutes. May I save that time for reply?
If you choose.
Thanks, sir.
May it please this honorable court, Mark Fenster of Russ Augustin Cabot for the appellee, Mr. Tefien, plaintiff below. This appeal involves a summary advancement proceeding pursuant to Section 145K. Like many companies, Homestore chose to adopt a bylaw that grants broad mandatory advancement without requiring any security or any showing of financial ability to repay, no requirements other than those required by the statute or by case law. First, let me state what this case is not about. This case is not about the merits of the allegations against Mr. Tefien in the underlying proceedings. Delaware law is absolutely consistent and clear on this point. Advancement rights are distinct from indemnification, and while indemnification rights are dependent on the merits below, advancement is not. What this case is about, as the Chancellor recognized, is Homestore trying to avoid the consequences of its choice to adopt broad mandatory bylaws without any requirement of financial showing ability to repay or security?
Let me ask you a question about that.
Certainly.
One of the issues that comes to mind is
we all understand what the public policy is behind the advancement, and the fact that Homestore chose to put into their bylaws as broad an indemnification and advancement provision as they could have under Delaware law. Is there nonetheless a contractual relationship between those to be advanced the expenses and, or to be ultimately indemnified for their expenses to act in a way that's consistent with the expectation of the parties, and that one of those expectations would be, even though there's no requirement of security for repayment, that they not squander assets or divert assets that could be available for repayment should they lose in the lawsuit for which they seek advancement? Is there not, in other words, an implied covenant of good faith and fair dealing that we should read into this advancement provision?
Your Honor, I think the answer is no. The implied covenant of good faith and fair dealing does inhere in every contract in Delaware that's undisputed. It's unclear whether it applies to unilaterally drafted bylaws, but even if it applies in this context to this employment agreement, the court considered Homestore's defense. Homestore had the opportunity to present its defense, the factual underpinning of which is bad faith and sheltering of assets, and they failed to prove up its defense. They simply failed to do so.
Johnson just said they didn't have a fair opportunity because their discovery was limited.
Yes, he did, and Your Honor, that's just simply incorrect. First of all, Homestore got, ultimately, all of the discovery that it asked for initially. This declaration of Mr. Narayan with 869 pages of exhibits accounts for every penny, accounts for where the money went. And Mr. Tafin and Mr. Narayan...
Including the $15 million?
All of the $15 million, Your Honor. Every dollar is accounted for in Mr. Narayan's declaration, and it satisfied the Chancellor. The Chancellor had the opportunity to assess the credibility of Mr. Tafin and Mr. Narayan. We submitted this declaration to the Chancellor at the Chancellor's direction, along with the deposition of Mr. Narayan, the full-day deposition that Mr. Johnson took, and the Chancellor was satisfied that there was no evidence of sheltering activity. Had the Chancellor initially granted the discovery that he ultimately allowed, there would be no issue here, and there is no issue here. They ultimately got discovery into the rank question based on nothing more than rank speculation, what happened to the money. They asked the question. They had no basis in the record, zero, for alleging any sheltering activity, and yet the court allowed this declaration. Mr. Tafin made more of a showing than any advancement plaintiff in the history of Delaware litigation under advancement law. In this summary proceeding, he had to account for where his money went. He had to justify every tax and estate planning decision that he made from 1999 through the trial. And he did, and the Chancellor assessed that credibility and found zero evidence of any sheltering, zero evidence of bad faith. Homestore had the opportunity to put on a defense. They chose not to do so. And once the court opened up discovery and reopened discovery, there is nothing in the record that suggests that Homestore asked for any discovery that it did not receive. There is nothing in the record that shows that they asked for discovery that the court denied. Mr. Johnson now makes the point, what happened to shutdown production? Shutdown production was an investment, and the court heard extensive testimony from both Narayan and Mr. Tafin about what their expectations were, whether they had any connection to shutdown productions. He assessed that credibility, and he found that there was no sheltering activity. Homestore not once asked for any discovery of shutdown production. They could have done so. They could have asked for, they could have served a subpoena or asked the court for permission to do so. Once it came up at trial, they could have asked for that, and they didn't. This is simply something that they're raising for the first time in the briefs on this appeal. The only discovery that they asked for and did not receive is the discovery regarding the underlying merits. And that is something that Delaware law is just absolutely consistent and clear that's not available in advancement proceedings. Your Honor, I'd like to turn briefly to the defense's laches, unclean hands, and implied covenant. First, two overarching points regarding these defenses. Homestore has only one factual defense. The factual defense that underpins all three defenses is that Mr. Tafin somehow acted in bad faith by intentionally sheltering assets. Homestore was allowed to present its defense, and Homestore failed to prove up its defense. If this court affirms the chancellor's post-factual findings, which it reviews, which this court should review only for clear error, that finding alone will result the bulk of Homestore's appeal. The court need not consider any further questions regarding latches and the implied covenant defenses. I'll turn briefly to the post-trial decision. Chancellor Chandler's decision was undisputedly supported by the record. Unclean hands is an equitable defense. It's an affirmative defense as to which Homestore bears the burden of proof. Homestore had the opportunity to present its defense and failed to do so. Homestore's factual defense and what it sought to prove is that Mr. Taffine acted improperly by taking actions to shelter his assets and thereby put those assets beyond the reach of Homestore in the event that it's ultimately determined that he's not entitled to indemnification. The court heard all the evidence and assessed the credibility of the only witnesses that were there to testify on the matter, Mr. Taffine and Mr. Narayan. After hearing the evidence, the court concluded, quote, Homestore has failed to demonstrate that Taffine took these actions for the purpose of placing assets beyond the reach of potential creditors, including Homestore's potential claim for reimbursement. Accordingly, Homestore has failed to demonstrate the factual basis for its unclean hands defense. The evidence at trial fully supports the court's ruling. The centerpiece of Homestore's defense in the pleadings and throughout trial was the purchase of the Parkland home.
As I understand the record, the chancellor concluded that there was a long history of a relationship between the people in Florida, and it was logical for him to buy a home in Florida, and especially since his in-laws were in Florida, he met his wife in Florida.
That's absolutely right, Your Honor. The evidence was that Mr. Taffine grew up in Florida, he went to school there, his family lived there, his wife's family lived there. The evidence showed that Mr. Taffine and his wife decided in 1999 and early 2000 to move back to Florida because they were having kids and wanted to raise their kids and their family. The evidence showed that the decision to move to Florida and buy a home there had nothing whatsoever to do with Homestead. And the facts as to those purchases are completely inconsistent with Homestore's thesis. Taffine sold his house in California for $1.2 million. He bought a home in Florida for $1.45 million. He put only 20% down, conventional financing, completely inconsistent with his thesis. O.J. Simpson bought a house for $15 million or whatever he did. This is not that case. This is not a case where he took $5, $10 million and dumped it all into his house. It just didn't happen. At the same time as Mr. Taffine submitted his undertaking in this case in July 2003, the centerpiece of Homestore's defense, Mr. Taffine refinanced his home, increasing the amount mortgaged, decreasing the equity and the amount that would be protected by Homestead, at the same time that he happened to submit his undertaking. It's just, as the chancellor found, inconsistent with Homestore's defense. You just cannot reconcile the two. And then Mr. Taffine, as the chancellor found, sold his home and bought a far less expensive home, one-third the cost. Turned out that Homestore's defense, which they had the opportunity to prove, turned out to be a big zero, Your Honors. With respect to the trust, what happened to the money, the trust and estate planning, Chancellor Chandler, assessed the credibility of the witnesses that testified about that, and he found that they were done for legitimate tax planning reasons and that there was nothing to suggest that it was done for sheltering or any other activity. Your Honors, besides Homestore's utter failure to prove up its defense, Homestore's unclean hands defense fails for another reason, and that is that the alleged prejudice is not sufficiently related to the relief that Mr. Taffine seeks in this summary advancement proceeding. To constitute unclean hands, there must be an immediate and necessary relationship between the alleged prejudice and what's sought. Here, the alleged sheltering of assets is just not sufficiently related to this inchoate repayment obligation that may or may not materialize sometime in the future. Your Honor, I'll turn next to the implied covenant of good faith and fair dealing. First, and this goes back to the Chief Justice's question at the beginning, First, Homestore's failure to prove up its defense of Mr. Tapping Shelter's assets disposes of Homestore's arguments regarding the implied covenant, because the implied covenant defense is premised on the same factual underpinning. Second, this court has held that the implied covenant will arise only where it's clear from what was expressly agreed upon that the parties who negotiated the express terms of the contract would have agreed to prescribe the act later complained of as a breach of the implied covenant of good faith had they thought to negotiate with respect to that matter. That's in Cincinnati Bell. And, Your Honor, when we look at what the reasonable expectations of these parties were, there is nothing in the record to suggest that the reasonable expectations, as the Chancellor found, would include that in order to receive advancement, the director or officer must refrain from estate and tax planning, must refrain from buying a home in a state that has any form of homestead protection, or from incurring extravagant living expenses. In fact, B502 and 03 of the record. In fact, the record evidence is exactly to the contrary. You have to look to the express terms of the agreements before that are being asserted. You have to look, there has to be some textual hook, something in either the bylaws or, under Homestore's new theory, the employment contract. There is simply no textual hook, and without that textual hook, you can't imply some term. Implied covenant is not some amorphous concept that enshrouds every contract with the concept of good faith or a fiduciary duty. In fact, the implied covenant is very narrowly construed and only allows the court to imply terms when there is something in the text that suggests that had the parties negotiated that, they would have reached that result. And the court properly found that there is just nothing in this record to suggest that the reasonable expectations would be other than what they got. And in fact, at Plaintiff's Exhibit 36, the Homestore, not only have they not changed their bylaws to require security or any showing of an ability to repay, but since this case has been around, the current directors and officers have entered into indemnification agreements that provide greater protection than the bylaws afford. Homestore got exactly the bargain that it wants. It maintains that bargain today, and it simply does not want to live up to its clear contractual obligation. As the court declared in Aspen Advisors, the court should not use the implied covenant to add a term, or doing so would be to grant plaintiffs, by judicial fiat, contractual provisions that they failed to secure for themselves at the bargaining table. Here, Your Honors, I submit that the Chancery Court properly rejected Homestore's request to rewrite its bylaws to include amorphous terms that Homestore itself chose not to include then and chooses not to include now. Your Honor, I will turn briefly to the summary judgment decision on Lachey. This is not something that was raised in oral argument, but it's in the briefs. The court should affirm the court's decision below regarding Lachey's for two reasons. First, as I just explained, Homestore had the opportunity to present its defense that Mr. Tapping sheltered assets, and they failed to do so. That failure shows that they cannot and could not have proven prejudice, an essential element of Lachey's, and so the summary judgment decision really is of no moment because they ultimately couldn't prove Lachey's. Second,
the argument, as I understand it, is he didn't bring his request until he thought he had secreted all of his assets, and then when he had everything safely away, decided to ask for the advancement.
That's the argument, Your Honor, and there are two responses. First, the court found that nothing was secreted, nothing was sheltered. Second, what he determined on summary judgment, and correctly so, is that there was no causal relationship between the alleged prejudice and the delay. Homestore argues in its brief that there doesn't have to be any causal nexus. That is simply wrong, and it's inconsistent with this court's holding. As this court said in Fike v. Ruger, quote, there must be prejudice to the defendant arising from an unreasonable delay by plaintiff in bringing the claim. In Robert O., this court's stated, but implicit in the concept of laches is the requirement that there be a causal relationship between the delay and the alleged prejudice. Here, there is no and was no causal relationship, even alleged, between the alleged sheltering activity and the delay. And the court properly rejected laches on that basis. Regarding reasonableness, very briefly, this court in DeJacobi set forth the standards of what a trial court must do with respect to a special master's ruling. DeJacobi stated that review must be de novo, it must be independent, and it must be meaningful based on a transcript. The chancellor in this case did exactly what DeJacobi requires. The chancellor's opinion states that he independently reviewed both the record and the special master's report. The chancellor independently reviewed the underlying billing record, and the chancellor reviewed the work required in the underlying proceeding. Having done what he was supposed to under DeJacobi, the proper standard for this court, contrary to Homestore's argument, is that stated in DiLoretto, an abuse of discretion. Your Honors, I'd like to just sum up. This is a garden variety advancement case under a garden variety bylaw. There's nothing unique about Homestore's bylaw in this case. Many companies have such bylaws, and Delaware law has consistently upheld them as promoting the invariant policy and the desirable end that officials will resist what they consider unjustified claims and suits, secure in the knowledge that their reasonable expenses will be borne by the corporation they've served. This case profoundly illustrates the importance of Delaware's policy. Without Delaware's consistent law upholding advancement, companies like Homestore would use their deep pockets to wear down former officers and directors through expensive litigation. In this case, Homestore dragged out this proceeding for over 20 months, spending over $1 million defending and causing Mr. Taffin to spend over $500,000 just through entitlement to enforce his clear contractual right to advancement. Advancement is absolutely critical to Mr. Taffin. He faces a criminal trial in early 2006 in which he's defending his innocence and literally fighting for his life. He does not have the resources to defend himself without advancement, and it's a clear contractual right that he's entitled to under the bylaw. Your Honors, an action to enforce advancement under Section 145K should not take 2 years. Defendants like Homestore should not be allowed to assert 11 affirmative defenses in a statutory summary proceeding like this. Homestore was allowed to, though, in this case, over our strenuous objection, to proceed with discovery in this summary proceeding and to present its defense at trial. Homestore failed to adduce any credible evidence or bad faith by Mr. Taffin or any sheltering activity. Indeed, the only evidence of bad faith in this case is Homestore's bad faith refusal to honor its clear contractual obligation to Mr. Taffin. Mr. Taffin respectfully requests that the court affirm the Chancery Court's decisions below and preserve his ability to defend himself in the ongoing proceedings against them. Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Thank you.
And please, the court. This is anything but a garden variety case, thankfully, from a Delaware corporate perspective. The record is, as the court is aware, that Taffin realized gains of at least $15 million in the sale of his stock. He was offered advancement by Homestore, didn't return the undertaking. July 2003, his lawyers tell Homestore's lawyers he's essentially out of money. Only then did Taffin promise to repay amounts advanced. To Justice Ridgely's question, the answer, Your Honor, is in the record at A-478. And does refer to, upon information and belief, Taffin purchased an expensive home in Florida. At the conclusion of trial, I move for leave to amend the answer to conform to the evidence. I apologize. I don't believe we have the amended answer in the record before the court. But the court granted me that opportunity. To Chief Justice Steele's question with respect to the implied covenant of good faith and fair dealing, how can it be otherwise that a Delaware corporation and its shareholders would expect that an advancement claimant would act in good faith in asserting entitlement to advancement and undertaking the promise to repay amounts advanced if it's later determined that he or she is not entitled to indemnification. This court in the Citadel decision held that officers and directors are not entitled to a blank check. That's, I submit, what's at issue here. Mr. Fenster asserted that HomeStore got all the discovery it wanted. The record doesn't support that in any way. The discovery is in the record before the court, and it is the sort of forensic accounting that I was touching on before. The question was asked, well, did the Narayan Declaration address the full $15 to $20 million in stock proceeds? The answer, indisputably, contrary to what Mr. Fenster said a few moments ago, is no. The Narayan Declaration Exhibit V, which appears at A2243, accounts for at most $13 million in so-called cash outflows, and with no access on HomeStore's part to source documents as to what those outflows were, where the money actually went. There is much more to say, but in the limited time, I would just reiterate respectfully that the Court of Chancery in this case was simply not in an opportunity to make an informed credibility determination with respect to Mr. Defeen or Mr. Narayan, because HomeStore's hands have been tied in discovery, and essentially the court had tied its own hands as well. Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel. We'll take the case under advisement.